In blockchain, you need everybody else to adopt it. You can put your title on blockchain right now, but nobody else is putting title on it, so nobody cares if your title is on it. But this is on the AI stuff. You don't need a whole community to adopt it for this AI to work, all right? And that's the fundamental difference. It's a no-brainer.
Real estate touches every one of our lives, yet it is the last major industry to undergo a much-needed digital transformation. That's why the brightest minds, backed by the biggest investors, are on this mythical quest to build one app to rule them all. I'm Sharon Srivatsa, and he is Pritesh Damani, and we're breaking down the quest for real estate's holy grail. Welcome to the Super App Podcast. One thing, Pritesh, that happened over the last few years was this, the building of kind of blockchain as a piece of technology, of an infrastructure. And then suddenly it feels like blockchain was starting to happen and people were like, hey, this is the next big thing and the whole world's going to run on blockchain. And then we went to AI. Like, so literally the blockchain happened and then this AI revolution took over. But one of the key emphasis or use cases for blockchain was this idea of a ledger, right? A ledger in some way. And they thought that it had numerous applications, especially in the real estate world, because it had very ledger-based approaches. What is kind of your idea on blockchain? Is it something that works, doesn't work, has certain applications? How do you kind of think about it?
Yeah, I mean, blockchain was so on point when it came to real estate in many ways, right? Like, you have title and it needs to be stored somewhere and you need to prove that you own this home. And the ledger on the blockchain was like this indisputable ledger. And without your private keys or without your little secret token, you can't change the ledger. So it makes sense, right? You would think like, oh, this is no brainer, except that it's not going to work, right? Like, the problem is like, it's just one of those things where the technology is ready, but the people are not, right? The governments are not, the counties are not. Like, literally, you buy a house in like Pinellas County in like, you know, the St. Pete area, and you go to the local county office to like get your tax records or like, you know, register homestead or whatever. You say, okay, you're going to have a standard blockchain for all of United States. You need to get all of these numerous counties on board. Yeah, and it's just such a big undertaking. And like, what's the incentive? You're basically, you are about to take a bunch of title companies out. Nobody's alive. Like, nobody wants to lose business. It's so revolutionizing that it can't happen that fast, right? Like, at some point, will it be on blockchain? Sure. Like, in my lifetime, maybe. Like, I don't know. I mean, it just feels so hard, right? There's so many companies I've met.
Yeah. But what's the difference between blockchain and you said a great phrase, which was kind of the technology and the infrastructure is ready, but the people are not. Do you feel that same thing exists on the AI front?
You know, it's funny. AI, whether people are ready or not, is coming. So the thing is, with blockchain, you have to convince a lot of people to do something. With AI, you just have to be ready to do something. The tech is there. So if you don't do it, someone else is going to do it, right? Like, I just saw GPT-4 came out a couple days ago. I mean, the stuff is crazy what comes out of that, right? So you can choose like, oh, I'm not gonna use it, and someone else is gonna use it. You don't need a whole community to adopt it for this AI to work, right? And that's the fundamental difference. In blockchain, you need everybody else to adopt it. For you can put your title on blockchain right now. You can literally go even to the BTC ledger and put your title in there. But nobody else is putting title on it, so nobody cares if your title is on it. But this is on the AI stuff. It's a no-brainer. I mean, so I think it's the opposite. AI is here. Whether you're ready or not, that's the opposite.
You know what's interesting from what you're sharing is, and I share this a lot with real estate agents or founders, is that it's often we think that what is the right thing to do? What is the right thing to build? And we forget the sequencing of things. Sometimes, you know, the sequencing of how you actually do things is super interesting. Like, it may sound like a very crude example, but I could have the same ingredients to make, you and I could have the same ingredients to make apple pie. I could do it a little differently and it would taste different. You could do it a little differently and it'll taste different. And the third party could do it completely differently and it won't even be apple pie, but it's the same exact raw materials. And it feels like in today's world, we call it blockchain or call it AI or call it these
these libraries like the ChatGPTs of the world that are available to us, we all have access to these similar ingredients, but the people that can sequence them well into their world feels right. Do you subscribe to this learning how to sequence things right kind of thought process, or do you think about it differently?
I think maybe, right? Like I'm not 100% sure. These two technologies are like, one is communal adoption and one is individual adoption. I think that might be a better way to think about it. It's like, for blockchain to work, everybody has to adopt it. But for AI to work, only I have to adopt it. Or maybe a few people have to adopt it, right? Like, I think that's like just the difference. I will say that without blockchain, AI might not have existed in a very weird way. And I'll tell you why. Like, this is just my deduction. The correlation is like the underlying chipset. So for AI to work, they needed these NVIDIA chipsets. In order for NVIDIA to build those chipsets, they were used for mining. The same chipsets were used for mining in blockchain. And if you see the trading and the valuation of NVIDIA and all the capital that they got to build the better chipsets came from blockchain. It came from all the crypto stuff, right? So crypto was boosting the graphic chips, and then AI kind of ended up using it. So in a funny way, blockchain might be like indirectly responsible for the AI burst that we had, because without the chips, you can't really build those models.
Well, so you talked about individual adoption, which probably is a really good topic for us to talk about. This individual adoption concept is interesting to me because I personally can go adopt a Bard or a Claude or whatever. I can go adopt those pieces of technology. But do you think in standard use cases, those are available to the world? So I'll give you an example, right? So let's say if I want to buy a new car. Well, am I going to ChatGPT and asking, hey, give me an analysis of two cars? I don't think people are using it for that rationale or that to that extent. Or if I want to buy a house, like we can bring our real estate example in there. When do you think, I think China, even you talked about WeChat last time and how deeply integrated WeChat is into their lives. Like literally everything happens on WeChat, almost everything. They almost use WeChat like Google, right? Everything happens there. Do you think there will be a time in the near future where instead of us searching or going to a branded website, oh, I'm looking for homes, I'm going to go to Zillow, or I'm looking for a car, I'm going to go to Edmunds.com or Cars.com or Kelley Blue Book or whatever. Do you think there is a world where no matter what I'm looking for, no matter what stage of the process I'm in, I go to a piece of AI to start my process?
It's a combination. So models are a point-in-time model, right? Like a model is trained with the knowledge that it's trained with, and then it's almost like someone takes a photocopy of your brain the way it is and the exact neural activity, and then it knows Sharon, right? And like the thought patterns of Sharon. So if a property shows up tomorrow and the model is not exposed to the property, the model doesn't know about the property, right? So however, now people have started combining search and models, right? So you say, hey, I'm looking for a property. It understands what you mean. It says, how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms? Oh, and it kind of knows a little bit about you. You like green stuff, you like mountains or whatever. And then it can issue a search on Zillow or whatever and bring the property that might be interesting to you. And then run AI on top of it saying, oh, this property, I know it just likes quartzite countertops and does not like, you know, wooden floors. Then you can run AI on it and like filter out stuff that I don't like, right? That's possible. But I think like models are not good at like ever refreshing information, right? I think people will go to AI to start everything. If you see WhatsApp, it's already started happening, right? I think WhatsApp is the next Google in many ways. But it's not going to have like up-to-the-minute relevant information. So these models have, these software have to start integrating with like more relevant and new information in them. You know, let me pull this information. In many ways, we do this with Leo, right? Like Leo is not trained. We have models that we are training, but we're not, it cannot be trained on information that's literally changing on a minute by minute basis right now, right? So Leo is smart enough to understand what you're looking for, then makes API calls and gets relevant information. And then again, processes that and like presents something in a meaningful way, right?
Yeah. So just to give people some context, so what Pritesh is talking about is our proprietary piece of technology that we call Leo, which is our AI assistant for our agents. It is constantly running in the background on our app. One of the cool things that Pritesh always talks about is that the reason we were able to build it quickly and where it was in the timing of the world is that it built all these information and personalization Lego blocks already for our agents. So we know exactly where an agent is, what the transactions are, what how much money they make, what state they're in. And a lot of people, when you talk to them about it, Pritesh will say, well, why does it matter that I know what state an agent is? I'm like, it's extremely important because now when you ask it the question, now it's very context sensitive from who your broker is, what the state laws are, et cetera. And it's not that other firms can't do it. It's just that we were fortunate to build the Lego blocks to be able to actually do that. But Pritesh, do you ever see a time where, you know, when we're building this piece of AI, it's now saying, hey, I'm going to go to various sources to get information. There are, I'm seeing a lot of like, I made up this word, secular AI. And what I mean by that is, I use Notion. You and I use Superhuman, right? So when I've tried to put all my stuff into Notion, and then when I use the AI, Notion AI, it goes in and it works through whatever the Notion databases have access to, and then gives me something from Notion. And then I have to go to Superhuman, and then it just kind of summarizes my email. But those two platforms don't talk to each other. Do you think that at either a WhatsApp or at some point, like a WeChat, there'll be a way in which a one interface talks to all your platforms?
Yes, there is in fact, there is like a startup that's trying to do that right now. It's called Rabbit AI or Rabbit MQ or something. No, Rabbit MQ is a messaging platform. It's called Rabbit something. Maybe we'll reference it in the notes on this podcast. But it's an AI that you talk to. It understands. It's connected to all your apps like Uber or whatever. So you can say, order me a car to go to, like, you know, San Francisco International Airport. It will do the whole thing for you via Uber.
Interesting.
So I think that might be the way. But like, again, like, you know, in this world of AI, everybody's quickly realized that data is the only commodity that's left. Private data, right? Models are dime a dozen. Every model would be very comparable to each other within the next year, like no matter how much innovation comes in, I think. So the only thing that makes you different is your own data. So for example, same thing happened with Netflix and the content industry, right? What makes Disney Disney is all the content they have over the years, right? There's nothing special about Disney on its own, but like, you know, it has Cinderella and Netflix doesn't. And it's the end of it, right? Netflix has the same problem. The reason they got into the content game is because they quickly realized that people were jamming them on content and nobody had interesting stuff to watch on Netflix. And I think they still struggle with that, right? Like they don't have recognizable, solid content yet, but it will probably take them 30, 40 years to build something meaningful, like a catalog that people like recognize, right? HBO has serious content, but again, it was curated and, like, you know, done well, right? So same thing with data on the AI side. Like, I think Quora, Reddit, all these people are like, at Twitter, all these people are like guarding up their content and updating the TOS actively right now to not allow AI models to like train on them.
Wow.
And now they're going to go into the licensing game where they will possibly, I mean, Twitter is highly unlikely to license it because of competing AI bots, but Quora probably is already licensing, I'm sure. Reddit is the same thing. So all of the, you know, except Wikipedia, everybody else is going to full on protect their content, right? So I think content is king.
So when you say data, a lot of times when we use the word data, we think about a dense set of data sets and numbers and charts and graphs and, you know, heuristic like just models that you have in the background. But what you're referring to is when you talk about Twitter and Quora and things like that, you're also talking about user-generated content that could be context-sensitive. Like even the Reddits and subreddits, there are user-generated content that could be insanely powerful for both search and personalized recommendations, et cetera, correct?
Well, yeah. Not only that, like I think even our own workplace, like our social network where our agents communicate with each other, that's user-generated content that in theory, like, you know, belongs to real and like can be mined and something interesting can come out of it. And nobody else has access to it, right? It's very special and it's realtor talk, right? So when you train a model out of that, you could train a realtor out of that.
Well, I don't know if you remember this time. This was late Q4 2023. It was kind of phase one, phase two of Leo. And we were talking to Andre, who you've done a show with, which is, he's like, hey, there's a lot of questions related to, because that's into our internal data. Agents asking our AI bot the question. And I think we asked questions of the bots that we probably won't ask a human person, because we know that it feels okay to ask it. There's a level of safety. But there was a lot of questions, because when I got the log of the questions, there was a lot of questions related to the theme of, hey, I'm running low on cash flow. I need to close a deal now. I'll try to figure out, and I'm happy to build my business, but not business for tomorrow, but business now, because I've had a tough 2023. And that's why we actually use that knowledge to start like a, you know, down market income playbook, how to get people, you know, training to create business now. And we would have never, that would have never happened. That's Rails proprietary data. And I think that's two levels deep, right? Level deep number one is, one, it's our proprietary data that no one else has access to. But two, it was the data that was conversations happening with Leo, the AI, not with a support person in a Zendesk support ticket. And I think that's insanely powerful when you think about where this data manifests itself and how you can potentially use it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, there are a few things that we're building right now that we can talk about in one of the future podcasts that will become like a idea minefield. It's not even that they are like the data has ideas in it for our future roadmap that we just don't have the capacity to even like go through, right? So soon we'll be able to tap into these areas where when we are saying, hey, what do we prioritize? We can literally just go through all the data we have and like find out what are people talking about and like automatically kind of know like what the priority keywords are, right? Stuff like that.
But I think you said something really amazing there. Sometimes we don't know the opportunities that exist in the thing that we already have, right? So we didn't build Leo knowing that what it would become today. Like the stuff that you and I are working on for what it could be later this year, that was not even in the thought patterns on the early days of Leo, right? And even more fascinating is when people originally asked us, hey, like, oh, great, now you're a real estate technology-based real estate company that has a AI bot. Like, who cares about your AI assistant? Well, it's fascinating when you think about it, right? I always tell people this. Here's how an agent's workflow works. They wake up in the morning and it's 8 o'clock and they're like, oh man, I'm curious about where my transaction is at, or I have a question. And so they're like, oh, I have this meeting. I'm just going to fire off an email to support, which is our really great support team. And I'm sure I'll get a response in the next couple hours. Well, they go on meetings for three, four hours. And then now it's noon. So they've shot off an email to support. Now support comes back and says, hey, yeah, Pritesh, thank you so much for your question about, you know, where your money is on the transaction. You have 5 active transactions. Which one do you need to get paid on? Like, it'll give me a chance to give you a better result. Now I the agent come back and I'm like, now it's 3 p.m. And now I have to pick which transaction. By the time it's, you know, 6 p.m., the day is over. But instead, we realize that from a delight perspective, I could instantly ask Leo the AI, hey, what's the status of my current transaction? Leo knows the same thing that our support team knows. And then Leo says, hey, here are 5 transactions, pick one. And they pick one and says, hey, you've not uploaded your final, you know, disclosures. As soon as you do that, it'll be ready to get paid out. But the crazy part is, one, from a agent delight perspective, it happens so fast that it's faster than someone can even look something up. It happens so fast. That's number one, right? Second is, it happens in real time. And so the time of day, you collapse all time of day, workday issues and time zone issues, which is insanely powerful. Third, you collapse device-centric issues. So I can do it from my phone. I can do it from my iPad. I can do it from my laptop. I can do it wherever I am. I can do it as soon as I have a thought. Because now when your daughters or my children are at a restaurant and they say, well, Dad, do you remember the song? And what do you and I do? Instantly pull out our phones and instantly get the answer to that question, right? We don't say, well, I'll check on the answer to that question when we get home. We say, like, we get the answer right now. And last but not least, what people don't realize from this AI revolution is, we didn't realize how much of a co-pilot or assistant it would be for our support teams. And that's insanely powerful as well, because We know that support teams don't scale linearly, but the AI will scale algorithmically, which is really powerful. So if we can just teach people, and if you have 100% adoption like we do on our app, and you can teach people like, hey, ask the first question there, and if it doesn't, it'll automatically create a support ticket. I think all of those things just in phase one, we didn't know that. What is it now? I think we have 1,200 or 1,300 in queries to Leo a day, right? Something like that.
Maybe more. Yeah.
That's 1,200 to 1,300. Yeah. So call it 1,200 to 1,300 inbound requests. I don't think an average support team can even, on most companies, can even handle 1,200 to 1,300 a day themselves, and the delight factor. So I think you said something really powerful comparing the blockchain and the AI, which was you need a ton of adoption for that blockchain to work. But we were able to, we don't have 100% adoption on Leo, but the people that are adopting the Leo, they are seeing benefits right away, which is super cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also the AI is there, but people don't go to the AI. The AI has to go to the good person. So there's that little element of delight or whatever you want to call it. Like, we're working on that now, right? Is to suggest the question that people are going to ask. Like, we did version one, version two. Now it's going to get to like this level that, you know, next week we'll announce something that will be the first leap towards like a holy crap moment, right? And that will be interesting to see how that's received. And like the final announcement would be at Rise. But for us, like, I agree with you that we didn't see us doing any of the stuff that we are doing right now. However, we did know that once we do version one, we will have ideas that will be version two, three, four, right? But yeah, you never know like where the adoption is, what the ideas are. Once you have the version one, everything else starts becoming obvious. Like, then you have other people like suggesting ideas that make sense, and things kind of organically grow. So you do have to make a leap of faith saying that direction looks right. Let's go in that direction and find out what happens. But you also have to have like some incredible talent. Like, this is not, none of this is like super trivial stuff to pull off for a small team. So we're lucky to have that.
Well, just to bring it home on this one, I think that every time I'm in this conversation, it keeps making me keep going back to the thinking around Lego blocks, right? So we know this Lego block that we could build. We have no idea where this Lego block can lead, but we're just going to build more of these Lego blocks. And then you're like, oh, cool. We already have 7 out of the 8 Lego blocks that we need. So now the team is more excited because they know that they can pull from this raw material and then create this new piece. So my question for you is this: when you think about product and engineering, how much of it is like a thinking around, hey, this would be a good modular Lego block for us? How do you think about that often? Do you talk about that often? Is it an active conversation? Is it something that you would recommend other people think about? Like, talk about the designing and development of something related to like, hey, if we build this, no matter what we do, this will be a good Lego block for us.
Yeah, this is like, you know, we take this for granted and we talk about it this out. I work quite a bit. It's when you've done this for 20, 25 years, like, things come organically a little bit. Luckily for me, I've worked in the enterprise world so much that Lego blocks is the only way for me to think about. Even if we wanted to build the smallest thing, we build the underlying Lego block and then we put the UI on top of it. Like, we don't actually build straight to UI. We never build the UI. In fact, the engineers who build our APIs, I actively encourage them to not think about the UI. It's very difficult for them. Like, they get really annoyed. They're like, what's the UI going to be like? Well, what does it matter? UI doesn't exist. Don't worry about the UI. Well, can I see the UI? You don't need to see the UI. They get really annoyed. They get really annoyed because they need to visualize how is their stuff is going to, like, how is the thing that they're going to make get presented. And what I challenge them to say is like, why does it matter how it's presented? You're working on an API. Like, imagine Twitter. If they thought about like, oh, what kind of UI is going to sit on top of it? It's like 3 buttons and a stream. But they have an engineering team that's probably 10x our size or maybe 100, right? So what are these people doing all day? Like, they're not building UIs, right? So the Lego block thinking is like every engineer in the team thinks about reuse and thinks about, if I'm making this modification, how can I advertise this to everybody else to reuse this modification, right? So it's not the Lego block that we talk about, our business level Lego blocks, but there's an underlying technology Lego block. It literally goes down to the avatar that you see with your little, like, you know, a circle and a face in it and says Sharon, that's a Lego block literally in the code base. So that anytime in the system, if you ever want to render that little bit, it's reused and it looks the same, no matter where it is, right? If you see variations, that means that a newer one version has come up and people have not started using that block yet, but you'll start seeing transition over the place, so over time, right? So that, so fundamentally, I think like good people with a little bit of experience start thinking Lego blocks pretty early. The business Lego blocks comes from just launching businesses. Like, you know, you just know.
Yeah. The reason why we wanted to do this episode was to really show the delta between, kind of like you said, the communal adoption model and the individual adoption model of certain platforms, right? And so hopefully everybody got an understanding of, hey, blockchain and what it's done for the crypto world, but AI and what it's actually doing for us and the whole blockchain versus AI overall. But don't forget that whatever you're building, start with the Lego blocks first. Hey, this is Sharon. If you sell real estate, I have a cool gift for you. I packaged up my 7 best money-making trainings for real estate agents called the Top Agent Power Pack. It's raw and real, and it's 100% free as our gift to you. Just go to topagentpowerpack.com and grab it right now for free. That's topagentpowerpack.com.